Ever feel like planning a trip is almost as fun as taking it? Hotel comparisons, restaurant reservations, a perfectly timed itinerary. What if your love of planning travel could actually become a source of income? As a Fora advisor, it can. Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan travel and help others travel well. With best-in-class training, powerful booking tech, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider knowledge, you can confidently build your own travel business on your terms, from anywhere. Every hotel, cruise, and experience you book earns you commission. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred travel partners from iconic brands to boutique gems, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout. The kind of elevated travel experiences most travelers never get. Now's the time to turn your passion for travel into a fulfilling business with Fora. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/advisor. That's foratravel.com/advisor.
The Shire is on fire. Foreigners have raided its borders. Saruman has begun his crusade to corrupt, enslave, and conquer the green pastures of the Shire. And he has exploited the greed of some of its own citizens to carry out that plan. In the penultimate chapter of The Return of the King, Chapter 8, we read one final story in Middle-earth, one that is noticeably absent from Peter Jackson's films, but a story that I would argue is pretty essential and crucial for the story Tolkien crafted. But before we consider that story, one aspect stands out to us. No one is coming to save us. The hobbits were without the aid of men, elves, and dwarves, so they fought side by side, laying down their lives for blood, kin, and home. They fought for the next generation. They were the last bulwark that could stop the spread of Saruman. And we Christian Americans are the last hope for the West. And as storytellers and Christians, we are responsible to tell stories that are good, beautiful, and true. Stories that inspire and motivate, stories that shape our emotions and thoughts, stories that the next generation will be raised on and be shaped by. So join us in this episode of the Fearless Wandering podcast as we discuss the scouring of the West. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Fearless Wandering podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Trenton Powell, joined by my other host, Tobias Powell. How are you?
Doing good. Excited to be here.
Excited as always.
Yes.
We have a few things to discuss today. Just as we've said before, we're kind of starting new on a lot of this, a lot of our podcasts, and trying some new things and seeing what works and what sticks. And we're really excited, of course, to be delivering this. We are under the umbrella of Fearless Wandering Productions, mm-hmm. Our production company, where we are making movies. We are in the process of releasing a new film coming out very soon, probably very shortly after this is released. What is Christian Nationalism? Go check it out on YouTube. Stay tuned. We'll be dropping that on January 9th. And we're obviously excited about that. And we're going to discuss a little bit about Christian nationalism here and as it relates to story and entertainment and films. And I mean, we're making a film, and mm-hmm. we're talking about, and with this podcast, we have a lot of goals in mind. And one primary goal is to just give a commentary on what we're seeing happen in the world of entertainment, of film and TV, and just try and really unpack trying to dissect and understand what is going on with entertainment, looking at like the last 20 years, especially as we've been raised in this generation and kind of the millennial and Gen Z generation, and just seeing a lot of things unfold. And now we're wanting to really dive deep and discuss it and then pave a path forward, because something's not working.
Yeah.
And we want to see change. So anyways, yeah. Anything you want to say about that?
No, I mean, I agree. Yeah.
So we're starting a series. We don't know how long it's going to go necessarily, but we're calling it Middle Earth in Film. And mm-hmm. So, you know, we love Lord of the Rings, the books, the movies, and we want to kind of take a lot of story elements from Tolkien's world and use it as a roadmap, you might say, as we work on, pursue that quest of dissecting and looking at the state of film and entertainment, and then looking at a path forward. And because we know that stories matter, and mm-hmm. I mean, I think Tolkien's world of Middle Earth is one of the greatest stories ever written by man, and you know, outside of scripture, of course, there's never been anything like Middle Earth, like the Lord of the Rings, and I don't think there ever will be again. Right. And so we want to look at that and look at Tolkien, study Tolkien, and really use it, like I said, as a paradigm, as an analogy, many different analogies drawing from it, and looking at different story elements and different aspects of Middle Earth and applying it to where we're at and entertainment and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot there.
Definitely. So today we're discussing the death of film and entertainment, specifically looking at the scouring of the West, as I referred to it. And basically the West is burning. Things are falling apart. What do we see kind of right now in the film industry? What we've observed in the last like 5 years and where we're at now, ever since COVID, really a lot of things have been exposed. Like what are things that you've seen?
Yeah, there's definitely no real creativity anymore. Everything's just remakes or sequels or whatever. There definitely hasn't been very much original stuff that's come from Hollywood that's actually been good. Or it's just been good and that's it. It hasn't been great or fantastic or anything like that. They've just lost all real creativity. They used to like subtly push their agendas and all that, but it's also become very, very prominent in the stuff that they put out, and they really have pushed it and they've pushed too far. They've gone over the edge and people are pretty much sick of it and they don't want to have anything to do with it, and they've lost tons of money. I mean, with the new Avengers, like you've said, like they went back to the white men.
Oh yeah.
So they're ditching all their beliefs and their systems and going back to the three original white men that they had that made the Avengers great.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. They're getting rid of all their girl bosses. Well, some of them at least. And I think it's been so interesting seeing that, because like I said, for a period of time, like almost every studio, almost every franchise, tried the female empowered, girl boss,
yeah,
superhero, or, you know, or just this hero of the story. And no one wanted that.
Yeah, no.
No one liked it.
No. And it always failed. Yeah, it just never obviously took off because it just wasn't anything anybody wanted. So
yeah, we saw the girl bosses, and then how were the men being perceived, and are still, and I'm saying was, still are in a lot of ways, in a lot, yeah, of movies and projects that are coming out.
Oh yeah. Yeah, like it's always the man is just a bumbling buffoon, he's portrayed as an idiot always, and needs the woman to come and save him, which is just a complete 180 distortion of what good storytelling is.
Yeah, absolutely. And the audience responds by not going to the movie theaters, not subscribing to the streaming services, by unsubscribing to a lot of streaming services, because then you have a lot of other garbage. You know, of course, homosexuality is very prevalent. The sexualization of women that we've talked about, almost every movie has to have a sex scene or a nude scene, and you see that even in TV shows now. Like, you never would have, like in the past.
Yeah.
Like way in the past. Yeah. Like sitcoms and stuff. Like there was some inappropriate stuff in a lot of sitcoms, you know, the 90s and the 80s, mm-hmm. But it was less prevalent. But now it's like you've full on basically porn scenes and yeah. TV shows.
Yeah.
And it's pretty often that you see that.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, and so we'll touch on that a little more, but I like I said, you know, this is Middle Earth in film. We're pulling stories from Middle Earth. I like pulling kind of obscure stories that people don't know much about. Like we're probably going to discuss a lot of stuff from the Silmarillion and the first and second ages of Middle Earth, because you know, if you don't know the Lord of the Rings films, I say, because that's where most people are introduced to Tolkien. Sadly, where in the films, you know, that's the third age of Middle Earth, the final age that Tolkien really wrote about. But you have two other ages before that, from basically the creation of Middle Earth, even pre-creation, and you have a lot of a little bit of that in the Silmarillion. Mm-hmm. But seeing the creation of Middle Earth, of the world, and then first and second ages, which span a very vast amount of time, and there's so many stories, so many amazing stories that we can draw from and stuff that I'm excited to dive into.
Yeah.
But also looking at stories that people are very familiar with in Lord of the Rings and whatnot. And today I chose a story that is in the Return of the King book, but is absent from the film. Uh-huh. I understand narratively why they didn't include this in the Return of the King towards the end, because it doesn't necessarily flow very well as far as I think from a cinematic perspective, as mm-hmm. you're telling a story, because it's kind of like you finish the third act in the Lord of the Rings, and the hobbits return home, Frodo goes off to the Undying Lands, and Aragorn becomes king and all this, and you know, everyone kind of goes their own way, mm-hmm. and the story ends. But in the books, we have this chapter 8 of the Return of the King, where we see the hobbits return back to the Shire. Now, this was briefly included in the films, in I believe the first movie, where Frodo sees a vision when he's in Lothlorien. He sees a vision where the Shire is burning, you know, orcs and men have raided its borders and caused destruction to the Shire, and that was included to help to motivate Frodo to see, like, this is why you're fighting for your homeland, for your people, mm-hmm. and you need, you know,
because this is what's going to happen if you don't,
right?
If you let the orcs in, this is what's going to happen to your land, to your home, and you have to fight. You have to do what you are called to do.
Right. And so Peter Jackson did briefly in a small way include it in the film, but it's very evidently absent from the Return of the King. So they return home basically. And, you know, I kind of want to unpack that story a little bit, but the hobbits return, after the fall of Sauron, and, they expect the Shire, of course, to be untouched by the wars of the world and all that they face, specifically the War for the Ring. But what do they find instead? They find, you know, things like the gates are locked when they get there, roads have been patrolled, and their homeland has quietly been occupied, seemingly. Mm-hmm. Rules are posted everywhere. Food is seized for distribution. You have socialism and communism happening. The trees, like the party tree specifically, is cut down, which was a big aspect of the Shire, where, you know, they would all, you know, gather around and have a good party, mm-hmm. and that tree was kind of the center of it all, and that was cut down. Hobbiton itself was just scarred by ugly buildings, and at the center of it all was this shadowy character named Sharky. He seems to kind of be quietly ruling and controlling everything behind the scenes, and the hobbits meet him as they're going I think they're going on their way towards Bag End, and they meet Sharky and his little minion, and have an interaction with him. They find out that he's kind of behind all this, and so they start seeing the destruction of the Shire, and all this land that they once loved is being destroyed and ruled by another, by mm. someone else. It's no longer ruled by the hobbits, and men have these scavengers, these men have raided its borders essentially, mm-hmm. and taken over. And then there's some hobbits that have sort of joined forces, have really allowed them, especially the Sackville Bagginses are a big aspect of that, and letting Sharky rule this place. And so the truth eventually emerges that Sharky is actually Saruman. Mm-hmm. So in the movies, Saruman, well, at least in the extended edition, Saruman dies towards the beginning of Return of the King. He doesn't die in the books, at least at that point. Mm-hmm. And so he actually has kind of been kind of behind the scenes, trying to take over the Shire. Mm-hmm. So this grand wizard who was, you know, once one of the Maiar, one of the Order of the Istari with Gandalf, basically one of the angels of Middle Earth, has now been has fallen very low to this conniving, mischievous character who's trying to take one last stand against what's good in the world. Mm-hmm. And so the hobbits, instead of despairing, what they do is they decide to gather together and fight this one last fight. You know, they're expecting to come home to their land being untouched by the world, by the wars of the world, but no, instead they find that it's even the corruption and the evil has spread to their homeland. Mm-hmm. And so Merry and Pippin, they rally the hobbits and organize in resistance against the men and the Sharky character, Saruman. Samwise, you know, fights as well, of course, and all the hobbits and Frodo's present as well, and they gather together, though Frodo is very much hindered by the ring still. Like he's faced a lot of physical consequences from no longer having the ring, and so he's not as involved in the resistance. But Sam and Merry and Pippin, they rally the hobbits to fight against the men that have raided its borders against Saruman. And the Battle of Bywater really has become the kind of the first time that the hobbits have had to fight for their homeland. Mm-hmm. And then they do, and then of course they are victorious as they defeat them, though at a cost. Many of these men of course died, but many of the hobbits, I think it was like 19 or so hobbits died during this fight, you know, residents of this homeland, but they laid down their lives for home, for kin, for blood, for their people, and they lost their lives doing so. But the hobbits come out victorious, and they win their freedom back. And of course, Saruman, after the fight concludes, Saruman kind of gloats that even though he lost, he has this very interesting line where even though he's lost, he gloats in the fact that the damage that he has done will not be undone in their lifetime. Like they're going to have to face ramifications of what he's done. He's like, I lost, but guess what? You guys have to deal with this now. You guys have to rebuild, and good luck doing that. Mm. And instead of despairing, they're like, yeah, okay, we're still gonna rebuild. We're gonna plant trees. We're going to rebuild what has been destroyed. And they actually do, though they expect it to take a long time, they actually are able to very quickly rebuild and give light and give life back to the Shire. Mm-hmm. And then this is where Saruman actually eventually dies, but he dies at the hand of Wormtongue. Wormtongue's actually the one that is his little minion as well. I didn't mm-hmm. mention that. So Wormtongue actually is the one who ends up killing Saruman. Frodo actually shows mercy to him. Frodo, being kind of the chief now, he, instead of having him killed, though some of the hobbits do want him killed, he's like, no, I'm just going to banish you from this land. You know, you're going to face enough consequences. You're going to face, consequences. You're going to have to live with the fact that you've fallen to this, and you're going to have to deal with it. So he shows him mercy, there's a line also where it talks about Frodo talks about his bitterness. Like, you're going to just wallow in your bitterness for the rest of your days. Mm-hmm. And that's enough punishment, basically. Mm-hmm. And so Frodo, after all he's experienced, he kind of shows mercy. But then Wormtongue ends up killing Saruman, and that's where Saruman dies. And anyways, there's a lot of things we can learn by that. they don't expect change to happen in their lifetime, but they do see change because they rally together to mm-hmm. rebuild what has been lost. And
yeah,
of course we learn a lot of lessons from that, like we're part of this project of rebuilding the West. We want rebuilding the new Christendom and mm-hmm. taking part in the and saving the West before it is fully lost. Mm-hmm. And this also just tells us a lot of things about how the Lord works in our time in this generation. Like we don't expect to see change mm-hmm. in our lifetime. We are building for the next generation, and we know that. But God may be pleased to bring about that change miraculously, to see revival in our land, to see our nation become a Christian nation again. That may happen in our lifetime. We pray for it, and we hope that that does happen. Mm-hmm. And we build expecting it, not expecting it to happen necessarily, but because we build by faith. And if the Lord is pleased to bring about that fruit now, great. But we're planting seeds that the next generation will reap from. And I think that's what that kind of, we see the spirit of the hobbits as they're not building because, oh, we'll fix things tomorrow. No, they're building knowing that maybe the next generation will reap the benefits of this. Right. They're planting trees again. That's what I love about. Like they plant trees again.
Yeah. So what you're saying is Calvin Robinson is the Samwise Gamgee of England.
Yes, he is. Absolutely. Yes. And he's, you know, building and planting seeds and mm-hmm. trying to be fruitful for the hope that England will one day be a Christian nation again. And he also cares about our nation as well, which is, you know, he's planting seeds here as well.
Absolutely.
He's in our film, by the way.
Yeah.
So I don't know what things have stood out to you in this story and that I think we can apply.
I was thinking about my conversation with Calvin during this and a lot of the warnings that he gave and a lot of the things that we talked about is like, like what happened to England is very similar to what happened to the Shire, to a certain extent. There's definitely a warning that like we do, like, a lot of that can be avoided, and there's work that has to be done. You have to do the work so that we can avoid letting our homeland be completely taken over, there is hope, and there are battles that we have to fight, and we have to be willing to fight, and we have to be willing to do what God has called us to do in the places we're at.
Yeah. And you know, as we're talking about this, you know, the political side of it matters. Like, we want to see godly politicians. We want to see mm-hmm. God's law lived out and applied in the civil sphere and the civil realm. And we're not necessarily, you know, in this podcast, we're not dealing necessarily with politics, though it matters, and we want to apply it when it does apply, and it's like we do want a Christian nation, but you know, we want to lead the path forward for storytelling because stories matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
Stories capture the imagination of people. You know, storytellers matter. Storytelling matters in this world, and what stories we're being told, what stories we're believing, what stories we're giving to the next generation, what stories are inspiring us towards truth, goodness, and beauty, and seeing the world as God made it, because God is a storyteller, mm-hmm. and that's why we care about stories.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, do you want to kind of touch on a little bit of that as we're looking at like moving forward and like, you know, applying this story from Tolkien's Middle Earth, but as we're wanting to tell stories that impact culture.
Yeah. There's definitely a massive need for it. And that's kind of like the whole purpose of our company is to be at the forefront of creating good stories, and the medium that is the most, I would say, popular among the normies of the world, just the everyday person just is film and TV. That's what people like to take their time to consume. It's kind of the easiest thing to consume, especially in a busy day. And that's where I've just had my experience. So, yeah. And there is a need for it. There's a desire for it from people, like, especially with what I was saying with like where Hollywood's at, like there's no good stories being told. And so there's a hunger for good stories. There are always, we do need good stories just as humans. It's something that we need. It's a way that we connect with other people. You know, a group of guys hanging out, like mostly you're going to do is tell stories and that's just how humans connect. And so telling good stories through film and TV is very much necessary. And, yeah, people want it. People want to support that and want to have that access to have good stories that they can watch. And that's what we're doing with all our projects. We have, you know, multiple projects on our roster right now and that we're working towards that'll be that for a lot of people, that they can have that access to that and yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, stories, you know, they, like I said, they capture the imagination of people. You know, one of the primary mediums of storytelling is film and TV, streaming services. And we're tired of seeing the Hollywood filth and slop being thrown in our faces over and over again in so many different ways. And it's, you know, it's hard to, like, you know, we love going to the movie theaters, but there just has not been anything good lately that,
yeah,
you know, we've been excited about and wanted to go see. And looking ahead in the next couple of years, there's very few things that we're really excited about. There are some, and we'll talk about that as time goes on. But yeah, a lot of it's just filth. Yeah. You know, there's a few diamonds in the rough, but very few. And
yeah,
and you know, I think our generation was a lot of ways raised on film, and I think this is the last 100 years. Or so, a little less than 100 years, really. As we've seen something that we've never seen in history, and that is film. And mm-hmm. And it's important. It matters, and it's such a cultural. It's so prevalent in culture. So we want to create movies and TV shows that are honoring to the Lord, that people, people of all over the world can see and enjoy. That tell stories that are good, beautiful, and true, that honor the Lord, and that inspire goodness, truth, and beauty, and that inspire us towards godly masculinity and godly femininity for women, and that's what we're about. And you look at Middle Earth, you look at Tolkien, and like that, like it has inspired so many generations now since it was written, and it's going to continue to inspire generations. It's going to inspire my kids as I raise them on these stories and get to tell. I have the joy of getting to tell these stories to my kids, and that's, you know, and get to see them raised up on the stories that I was raised on, and that captured my imagination. And yeah, and so we've seen the West burn. It is on fire. It is dying. Hollywood is dying. You know, I think the film industry is dying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right now in the film industry, one big looming question is, you know, who's going to buy Warner Bros.
Mm-hmm.
Warner Bros. Is probably going to get purchased by Netflix. And,
yeah.
Spoiler alert, that's not a good thing. What's funny is there's this bidding war for Warner Bros. One of the biggest movie studios, you know, ever. Funny enough, the movie studio that produced the Lord of the Rings films.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that has the right, like, and this is another thing we're going to talk about. Yeah, they have
the
rights
to the movies. Like, yeah. It's what, yeah. Everything that's in the movies, they have rights to.
Right. Basically everything in the three, in the trilogy of books, you know, which is actually six books. If you want each movie is two books, but, the first,
The Hobbit. Yeah. And Warner Bros. Was smart enough to not do a remake of the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
You just wait.
Up to this point, they were Netflix smart enough. But now that Netflix is buying it, yeah, there will almost immediately be an announcement of a remake with probably Greta Gerwig or someone making everybody female.
Yeah, right. Greta Gerwig is making Chronicles of Narnia TV show that's going to be an absolute abomination. Apparently, it's all about rock and roll, and Aslan's a woman,
voiced by a woman.
No joke, no cap.
Probably a male lion, voiced by a woman.
Yeah, a male lion. I think androgyny has reached its pinnacle in Aslan.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's so many things I want to discuss about this, because the most evident thing that I see here is that Christians have lost the script. They have let go of two of the greatest franchises, the greatest stories, that we've seen in the last 100 years, 200 years. The Chronicles of Narnia and the Lord of the Rings. The Christians do not own those projects.
That were created by Christians.
Men who love Christ, and would be, as they say, rolling in their graves, if they saw what was going on with these worlds, these stories that they crafted. And yeah, it's sad to see. One day I hope that at least in my kids' generation, like I said, the Lord can do it in our generation. I hope that one day Christians will own the rights to the Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Sauron owns Lord of the Rings right now.
Yep, Mordor has won.
Yeah,
and it's sad to see.
Yeah,
and we'll be discussing the Lord of the Rings films in the near future. Stay tuned for that. But there's a lot of things that we have to say about those movies. But it's just sad that Christians are, instead they're spending the money on things that I would say don't matter, and they're wasting their money. Christians have resources. Christians have money.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But they've given away these things and wasted their inheritance. They've wasted their inheritance.
Yeah.
And we're continuing to see that.
It's interesting to think of, like, you had Tolkien and Lewis that would meet at a bar often and debate theology and talk about their stories. And then now you have the people that own them that probably meet in an office and talk about how they can make things more gay or make more money. And yeah, it's so sad to see.
Yeah.
It's such a tragedy of these stories and what Tolkien and Lewis had done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It is a tragedy to see. And, we, of course, are walking by faith, and as we're building a film production company, we pray that the Lord will bless it, and maybe one day, either in our generation or the next, we may, own the rights to things like the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Or create stories, we'll never create something as grand and as incredible as Lord of the Rings. Tolkien gave 30 years of his life to Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Maybe even more, but at least 30 years to writing that those stories. And
well, we better start now.
We are. Exactly. Lord willing, we are. But yeah. The mind of these men who were enchanted by the stories of past generations in their time of the stories that came that they were taught as they grew up and the stories that inspired them, to write their stories. And we hope that we are inspired by them to write our stories and so forth. And yeah. And there's just so many things. That's why I'm excited about going through this series of just Middle Earth and looking how it applies to film and entertainment and storytelling. And Yeah. So I think going forward, we are asking the question, like, what do we need? Well, we need people. When the Shire was threatened, when the livelihood and nature of the homeland of the hobbits was in danger, no one was coming to save them. As I said, like, it wasn't men and elves and dwarves like the hobbits did have throughout the story of the ring. They didn't have anyone to come and save them. They had to rally together to fight for their homeland, for their people. We as, like I said, as American Christians, no one's coming to save us. We are the last bulwark. Standing against the insanity of Islam, of secularism, in all its forms. We're the last bulwark against Mordor coming to ruin what is left of the West. And so we want to stand against it and fight. And one way we're going to fight is through telling stories. That's what the Lord's called us to do in this time. And we of course, being faithful in other ways is being good Christian men, being good churchmen, and being good husbands and fathers. But you know, specifically as storytellers, as we're living our stories, as we're writing our stories every day, as we're inspiring others and is inspiring each other and encouraging each other towards being good men who love Christ and honor him in all that we do. But when the Shire was threatened, they didn't have elves, men, and dwarves to come and save them. They were alone. And like I said, no one's coming to save us. We are the last bulwark and we are the last stand. And if we lose, if America loses, that's it for the West. and maybe that's in the Lord's providence, Lord's sovereignty. That's what may happen. And God likes to bring life out of death. There's resurrection. There's something beyond the grave. So if the West dies, the Lord will raise something more glorious and greater from that. And we trust them in that. So we pray that he may tarry, that he may bring about resurrection now, as we've seen a lot of death. There's a lot of death. And so we move forward, we die, we put ourselves in the grave and trust that the Lord will raise us up. We plant seeds, trusting the Lord will have something more glorious beyond the grave of our lives, of the stories we tell and the seeds that we plant. We've let Hollywood feed us garbage for years. You know, like I said, there's been a few good things. There are movies that we love and enjoy and that we will even recommend. The majority of films, we're going to give a caveat. We're going to say, okay, there's some filth here. And it's sad to say that, like, there's not a perfect film out there. There's not perfect stories. There's, you know, there's promiscuousness, there's, sexual immorality. A lot of things are prevalent even in good stories that are told in good movies, but, some of it is good. We do have a large list of films, both that we love and that we enjoy, and stories that we want to tell, and stories that we consume that I think are good and that can inspire us. And we pick and choose, and we take the good and throw out the bad. And there's a lot of bad, but there's a lot of good as well. But Christians, they've also taken the bait, I'd say hook, line, and sinker. They spend more time and resources giving their money to things that are worthless, and that are garbage. We say no more. We say no more. We want to see the future of storytelling. We want to see the future of film entertainment to change, and that's what we're about.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything else you want to kind of say along those lines.
No, I mean, yeah, there's work to be done, and just have faith that have faith and remember that Christ is King, and he rules over everything, and he has a plan. He is sovereign. But that does not mean that there's not work to be done, and that we do have to be, faithful in our work and do the work that we are called to do, and be supportive of other Christians and the work that they're doing, and yeah, less fighting is always better from within. That is how empires are destroyed. That is how coalitions are destroyed. And there just can't be as much fighting as there is. And there needs to be more unity and more support. And though I may disagree with you on some points, I mean, if you can recite the Apostles' Creed, I would say you are a Christian, and you have to be okay with, like, that's what it takes. I mean, it's not as complicated as you may think. You know, there can be certain things that you can think that are false, but if you can say, you know, Christ is Lord and repent of your sins, like, that's it. Like, you don't need to say that you have to do all these other things, otherwise you're just getting legalistic. And so to have more unity and have more more brotherhoods and coalitions built with these differing opinions proves that we are Christians, and that we are not like the leftists that will hate us, and I mean, they're far more unified than we are in some ways. Though I guess if you take like J.K. Rowling, they hate her. Yeah. But right. But yeah, we need to have unity, and the Hobbits were unified, and they conquered, they saved their land, and we need to work to save ours.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, we're not meant to sit on the sidelines anymore. Yeah. We're not to sit on the sidelines as Mordor moves forward, as Mordor takes more ground in our culture, in film and entertainment. And, you know, we don't want to see the darkness grow anymore. Like the Hobbits, we may feel small and insignificant. Like the Rangers, you know, we don't want to wander alone anymore, alone or unseen, I guess. Mm-hmm. But history, history is always moved by ordinary people who choose to be faithful when it would be easier to just despair. Mm-hmm. You know, no black pills here. Yeah, right. We don't want a black pill anymore. We want to fight and reclaim what has been lost. And as Gandalf reminds us, we have to decide what to do with the time that is given. Mm. This is our time.
Yeah.
This is our road. And the story is not finished yet. God is telling a story, and we are part of that story, and we want to be good characters in that story. Mm. And we want to be faithful. We want to read stories that are good, true, and beautiful. We want to watch stories unfold that are good, true, mm-hmm. and beautiful. We want to live stories that are good, true, and beautiful. If we're going to reclaim the West, we need to be re-enchanted by the stories of the past and write and tell stories that will inspire the future generations. Yeah. And inspire this generation to build for the next generation. Mm-hmm. And it's important. Storytelling is a very significant aspect of cultural change.
And yeah,
that's our small little corner of this grand project of the new Christendom that we are a part of and that we are seeking to be faithful in. And
yeah,
we ask that God may bless it.
And absolutely,
we move forward in faith that He will.
Yes.
So, I'm gonna close this out.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys for listening, first of all. And yeah, if you want to support us, we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/fearlesswandering. We have two movies on there, a TV show, and that is, we will also have What is Christian Nationalism on there. You'll be able to watch it there without ads. It's going to be released on YouTube January 9th at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. But if you want to watch it without ads, because YouTube will insert plenty of ads for you, if those are annoying.
It may even take it down.
Yeah. Follow us on Fearless Wandering through Patreon. But Fearless Wandering Productions is our YouTube channel as well, so subscribe there. And we'll be posting things there, but our Patreon channel, we will be releasing like the full interviews with all our interviewees, and some behind the scenes videos, and a director commentary of the film. So there'll be plenty of extra content there. And yeah, so that's the best way to support us is through Patreon. It's $5 a month. We have one tier. So that support is greatly appreciated, and we appreciate the supporters that we have already. We thank you very much for that. And yeah, remember, just be faithful, fight where God has placed you. Do what God has called you to do. If you feel something, you know, tugging on you, like that you're supposed to be doing, take it seriously, pray on it. Maybe it's a fight you need to be involved in, and be faithful and trust that Christ is King.
Amen. We're out.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Thank you, everyone.